Welcome, everyone, to this special bonus episode of Valhalla Conversations podcast titled Legends of Jorvik. Now, there are many tales of York and, okay, Jorvik, but this is more particular to the modern era because I am an annual pilgrim to the annual Viking festival held in Jorvik, run by the Jorvik Viking Museum and the York Archaeological Trust. And every year they have a great set of acts, academics, historians, authors, performers, storytellers, drama shows, you name it, they've had it on, and it's all to do with history or mythology or both. And I've decided, you know what, I like them all, so why don't I get them on and talk to them about their work and how they creatively use history, mythology and more to make wonderful pieces for audiences to engage with. And I'm delighted in this debut episode of a mini series that I'm working on to welcome two of the three members of Old York Theatre, Charlie and Ollie. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, yeah, thank you for having us.
Now, I'm going to say Old York Theatre is a very new theatre company of sorts on the block, is it not, Charlie?
Yeah, very new. Yeah, not like its name, it's not at all. It's a very new theatre company, and this was our first show. Yeah.
Yes. Now, these guys, if you're wondering, audience and listeners and viewers, on whatever platform you may be listening or watching, they performed a debut play called Jorvik, kind of aptly at Jorvik Viking Festival, and I was one of the first audience group to participate in some way, or at least immerse myself in it, because it is a play that doesn't have a stage. It is an immersive play. You are literally not just an audience watching, you're participating, you're witnessing, you're experiencing it all, and I definitely experienced it, and I absolutely loved it, and I ranted and raved at these guys afterwards because I loved it that much, and I haven't scared them off, it's why they're here. But they might not come back again after tonight, so we shall see. So I would like you, Charlie, then, because I know you were the master behind the wonderful script. Would you explain to our audience and listeners what Jorvik's play is and what it's about?
Okay, so Jorvik is set exactly at the moment of the fall of Ethelwulf and the rebirth as Jorvik, which in history is a major moment. And like throughout history, cities go through these changes, as we've seen all over the country and the world. And this moment, even though it's about this moment, really, it's about humans. It's about human connection. It's about legacy, the one to be remembered. Like, instead of now using TikTok and Instagram to get fame, the Vikings use sagas. So we're not that far away from our ancestors as we think we are. And Jorvik is an exploration of that. But meanwhile, bringing a new style of theatre to the north, something a bit different. Immersive, so like every audience member plays as big a role as me and Ollie. And genuinely, without the audience, there is no show. Like, in other theatres, you can get away with being no audience there. You can't see them. It's like it's dark. But in our show, it lives and it dies by the people who turn up in the room that evening. So yeah, it's just a really fun new exploration of something different, and people seem to really enjoy it, which was lovely.
It was a real treat and experience. It was so masterfully done. I wish it could be recorded and shared with the world, or that it could just be put on weekly so people can just always go get a dose of Vikingness, because it started off pretty strongly with you, Ollie, because you play, should I spoil it? I'm going to spoil it because I don't know when you guys are next showing it, but you play the character of Odin, am I correct?
Yes, you are. I suppose to some extent there's an element of interpretation, but certainly in our head canon, I play Odin. I'm Odin in the script, and one of the things that I deliver to an audience member that has a bit of script for them to read is labeled Odin's fave. So I'm pretty much Odin, but I think there's like a little bit of room for interpretation there as well.
You might think he's Loki, maybe.
Yeah, people might think he's Loki.
Now, that is one line that really made me chuckle, especially because, of course, you, Charlie, you're not just the writer, you also act it out yourself, because you play the role of Ubba, one of the legendary sons of Ragnar Lothbrok that came over and caused havoc and did leave their mark, especially in York and England in history. And it's a wonderful, if not beautifully majestic, debate almost between Odin, although Ubba may not name him as Odin, but he certainly appears as a skald, a storyteller, and this storyteller keeps opening up the conversation to, of course, the issue, as you mentioned, of legacy and remembrance. And that's beautifully paired not just with the human experience of these warriors wanting to live forever and dying off to Valhalla, which every good Norseman seems to stereotypically want, but of course Odin, as a god of a forgotten pantheon of limited worship these days. I mean, there are still some that do follow the old ways to some variance degree out there, but I thought that was a beautiful reflection, especially an exploration of Odin's character, because of course people know him as a god of war, a god of glory, god of prophecy to some degree, but he's also a god of knowledge and fate, because he's always trying to outrun, if not outprepare, Ragnarok in a way, which is why he wants all these warriors. And I think that was a really good mirror representation you did, Charlie, with the script for these two characters, especially because not many people think of Uba. I mean, I think of Uba when I think of just the guy from The Last Kingdom, which I actually got to meet. He was amazing. He's as tall as he is on the screen. I felt even smaller. But of course, there's Ivar, and there was, now the third name is going to elude me now. There was Ivar, Uba, and I want to say Sven, but it's not Sven. I'm sure someone will comment and correct me.
I don't want to put a name out there because it's wrong. I know Uba and Ivar were there, so we'll go. We'll go on.
I think there was a conversation during rehearsals where there was the earlier version of the script where we mentioned lots of Ragnar's children by name, and then during the course of like researching the show, we realized that there's a great amount of debate as to how many of them are authentic children, and so we were just like, you know what? Let's just stick with Uba and Ivar because we know those ones are
pretty
solid.
Yeah.
My brain's just said Halfdan, but I could be wrong on Halfdan as well. But anyway, there are supposedly at least three brothers. We know that much. Certainly from watching The Last Kingdom, I know there were three. But again, that's kind of an open interpretation. So I'm going to suggest the question kind of like, how did this all begin then?
Okay. So it really began while I was still at drama school. So my final project, I wrote a play about Sigurd, who was supposedly the son of Ragnar as well, but that is still up for debate. But in the interpretation of the film that I did, Sigurd was the son of Ragnar. And it was kind of, it was about like legacy, and I picked Sigurd because he's briefly mentioned in history, like about as Ragnar's sons, and then he's forgotten about. So I did a film about Sigurd, and that got shown at the Viking Festival.
Really?
That was 2 years ago.
I must have missed it that year. I'll admit, I haven't been to the Viking Festival in person for a number of years, simply because Trans-Pennine Trains couldn't get their act together for a long time. Now they have. I'm a bit more mobile. So I'm gutted I have missed out on that. But yes, carry on.
And when I was there, I realised, be great if there's a theatre show here, and it wasn't. So I simply emailed the Ovik. It's like, oh, actually no, I wrote a script in an hour. Ollie loves his story. I'm not a trained playwright. Playwriting is literally just come from how I write just comes from my head. So I just locked in, wrote a play, as you do, and then I sent that to the Ovik and was like, any chance I could put this on? And they were like, yeah. And I went, okay. Because I've always been an actor, trained as an actor, professional as an actor, but never producing, never writing or directing. So I brought on some experienced heads like Ollie and Jack, who are they know the industry well and they're great people. And I was like, help me make this real. Because I've signed a contract to put it on. And then we went from there, really. And then Ollie came on board, and I'll let Ollie take over the story.
Well, yeah, as Charlie says, he sent me the script and said, I hope you'll be on board because I've already signed the contract. I was like, well, as your friend, I ain't really got much of a choice now, have I? I read the script and I thought it was incredible. You've seen the show. I think some of the poetic, some of the poetic writing in there is phenomenal. And I sort of fell in love with the script straight away. I read through it and then highlighted two lines right near the end of the script, and Charlie will be able to tell you what those lines are. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they're his lines anyway, so it's fine.
On the spot.
why must we wait until we are of another world to hear this praise? Why must it come when we are gone? Oh my god, why must it come when we are gone? I say anymore, why must it come when we are gone? Better the performance.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah, I think it's those two lines.
Yeah, it was those two. I read those two and like I felt like a, you know, like almost like a hit to the heart. And I thought that's the message of the show. You know, like why do we wait? Why do we wait for our to be gone before we celebrate our legacies? Right, like we should be celebrating those people that we love around us all the time. Because we only have one go round. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that for me, that really spoke volume. So I highlighted that and I sent him back the script and I said, yes, I'll do it. And this is it. This is the show.
That's brilliant.
It was lovely. And then we got Jack on board not too long after. We sort of reached out to him. I've worked with Jack before on different projects. He's a very accomplished producer, theatre maker, actor himself. He's done a lot of amazing work with like VR and stuff like that. He's a really talented guy. And I said to Charlie straight away, I was like, if we want someone who really knows their stuff inside out backwards, this is the guy we want. So we had a meeting, he read the script, got back to us and said, yeah, I love it, I'm on board. So we've worked kind of like we worked with Jack quite significantly for a while and then in a slightly less intense capacity more recently, but he's still always on board to sort of help us out and step in. And
he's our all father, isn't he? He watches
we need
some help.
Now, is it because of the way you highlighted those particular words, Ollie, that maybe you were thinking you'd have the role of Uber in the end of production, or did you always want Odin?
No, I knew that. I knew Charlie was Uber from the get go. I think I think I'm more suited to Odin, and I always kind of felt like I was. And I made the mistake of suggesting to Charlie at one point that I needed more lines. Yeah, I was like, mate, I already had so much to learn. And then I was like, mate, you've in this bit of the script here, you've said like, you're such a wordsmith is like the next line. But what Odin had said before that was something very simple. And I was like, you've set this up perfectly for a monologue here. And he was like, you know, that would have to be you. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, I must admit, afterwards, it kind of really dawned on me how much you both had to remember and the certain cues. I mean, I can still remember kind of like the intro of you, Ollie, saying kind of like, welcome, Harold Bluetooth. And of course, everyone's looking at the door thinking someone's going to come through and no one does. And then you pull the little joke / stunt with the Bluetooth speaker, which I thought was really, really clever. I quite like not just the way completely broke the fourth wall and that there was no fourth wall. We were all in that moment, in that room, in that scene. Amazing. As not just being an indirect passive observer, but kind of like you doubly broke the fourth wall and that you kind of acknowledge that, oh yes, we're speaking in the past, but really I know you guys are all from the present and here's what you've been doing with the legacy of Mr. Bluetooth here. And I still like the line that the Bluetooth speaker appears to say at the end. It really made me chuckle. And of course, you do give one of the audience members, or kind of like the immersive audience, a script and another one a script and have them do a little bit of acting.
Yeah.
I'm curious, is the script that they get the same for every time you've done the show, or have you done a different one per show? Because you've done a little bit of a tour with Jorvik. So I know we've not just seen it in York, it's been to Hull and I want to say Liverpool, but I could be wrong.
Manchester,
that was the one. I knew it was somewhere past where I am from, which is Huddersfield. So you've kind of like, you've been one way and then passed me the other way.
So the script we gave out is the same every show, but it's always, the interaction is always so different.
Yeah.
Which is really lovely. The venue and the audience inform the show massively. Like no two shows are generally the same, which is really nice as a performer. It's nice not to get stuck in that like trap of, right, we do the show, we know it, we go through it, and you end up going on autopilot. Even the best actors in the world, you can't help but go on autopilot. But with this, every show is alive and every show is different. And like, we did four different venues in 4 days, very contrasting venues. So for me and all, we didn't even have rehearsals in the venues. We only had rehearsals in
gosh.
Bally Hall was the only place we got a rehearsal.
Wow.
Just because of time and money and resources. So the first time us doing it in that venue for the show was the first time we were doing it in that venue. So like, we were figuring it out as we were going along, like in Manchester, we're in a cabaret bar. So we've gone from Bally Hall to a cabaret bar. It was, yeah, totally different. And it's like using that space to inform the show. So, yeah, the scripts were the same, but everyone brought their own different, unique story to it, which is what I love about the format.
That's the great thing about a show like that, is that, you know, we set up the audience essentially and go like, here you go, here's the baseline of what we've got here. Like, we've got all the bits we've planned. But really, this show is what you make of it. You know, an audience that's super involved and super engaged and is like joining in and, you know, pitching in ideas and stuff like that, they're going to get a great deal out. And obviously it's on us to like draw the audience in early doors. And that goes back to the Bluetooth speaker thing. There's a few different moments at the beginning of the show, like the Bluetooth speaker or the what happens just after the fight, where we sort of break the fourth wall again and make a kind of joke of it. And all of those are there very deliberately to kind of set the audience expectation, to set that contract between us and the audience and say, look, you know, this isn't going to be, you're not going to have to sit there quietly this whole time and just watch two actors go at it. You know, we're here to sort of bring you in and engage with you, and the more response you give us, the more we've got to play off, and it makes this show better and more like Charlie says, more alive. You can't switch off.
No,
you can't switch off, which is nice. Yeah. It's nice, you know. Like,
we surprise each other as well sometimes.
Yeah, I surprise Charlie in Manchester. Yeah.
Oh, I want to know more about that. Tell me more.
I don't even know why. I just forgot one of my lines. Thankfully, it was when Charlie was on stage. So we're just staring at each other for like about 15 seconds. I'm waiting for him to speak. He's waiting for me to speak. And then I realize like, oh, I think actually this is one of mine. So we're just like really intensely looking at each other. And I just go, oh, it's me, innit? And the whole audience laughs. And I think because we've established that contract, that like we are going to step out and we are going to ignore, or at least Odin's going to, because we kept it pretty separate. Like Uber generally,
I'm in the world of
this. Yeah, because he's been brought into Odin's space, right? Odin's in control. Odin can talk to the audience in the future and in the past. He can kind of control that realm, whereas Uber is very set where he is, and he's being taken along for the ride almost more than the audience is. You know, the audience is more in on it than he is. Certainly by the end.
And what I love about that was I had so many people coming up to me after. In any other show, someone forgets a line always. It's not good. But in this show, it's beautiful, and I love it. And that's the people coming up to me saying, "How did you write that in? That was really clever." Like, that was so well rehearsed, that bit. And I was like, oh, yeah, it was. but what I love about that is it's the realness and the rawness, and it's what I want to bring to theatre. It's that, like, there is no hierarchy, performer, audience. We're just two blokes who are just in a costume telling a story, but we're all in the room together. And that's what's magic about it. It's the magic that it's real, it's raw, and that's why we want to take it to unconventional spaces, do something a bit different, and really like break that barrier of theatre and like what people expect a theatre experience is, because it's not for everyone, and it is elitist. Like, it's expensive, it's all these things that it really shouldn't be, and really it is for the people, and we hope to keep doing that and in our raw, honest approach. Yeah,
I think that's another thing that if you think about like the format of theatre, and you know, there's so much on TV now. There's so many movies that, you know, it's all accessible via streaming. And the thing that theatre really still has to offer is that is the fact that you're there in person with it. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of theater, when you're just sat in an auditorium looking up at a stage, I mean, yes, they are there in front of you, but for all intents and purposes, it could just be a screen. Do you know what I mean? But with this, like I can come on, lean on an audience member's shoulder and chat to them and like, do you know, and we carry on with the scene. And you can't, you know, this is the only medium where you can do that, really.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that it was really important to us that we were using every option available to us to kind of make this immersive and make this something special and unique that people would go home and be like, oh my gosh, we saw this thing and it was like amazing. And they were talking to us and like, you know, they came over and patted me on the shoulder and gave me a fist bump and like shouted in my face. And like, you know, we want it to be sort of unique and special and yeah, truly like immersive.
And then make it that immersive accessible as well, because not everyone is confident or wants to be like picked on or spoke to. So one thing that we really made an effort was, even the people like my mum, for example, she's the shyest person. She like has a general phobia of being on the stage. So it's like, how do we get people like that to come see the show and enjoy it? So we made a real effort of just a simple bit of an eye contact, just to like a bit of smile. Just to like, but we hopefully, and I think we found that balance across the tour, we found the people who wanted to take that next step, and we found the people who wanted to just enjoy and be there and still have those moments. So it's, how does everyone leave with an equal experience, like an equal satisfaction from the show, but with a different involvement level? But I think we found that.
Yeah. There's little tips and tricks you can do to make sure that you aren't picking on anyone that isn't going to want to be involved. And then, you know, the feedback that we got, I think, really reinforced that, which was really lovely. Okay. A lot of the feedback we got was people saying, oh, you know, I felt like comfortable, like I was made to feel comfortable. And then I really did want to get involved, or, you know, I was glad I didn't get chosen and all that kind of stuff. So that was really nice.
I was really impressed with the kind of like gradual way you introduce ways the audience could get involved, from the kind of like the chanting and banging of the chest, ollie, to kind of like raising the toast and scowl. And then of course I remember when Charlie joined the performance and then sitting next to the guy on the bench opposite, because I was at the Barley Hall performance and I was on the back row. I managed to squeeze at the end as on my own son, because my husband doesn't do biking things, plus I have a kid, so he just stay with the kids, so he's fine. He was fine, I was happy, so it was all good. But one of the two American ladies I was sat with, we were talking before the show started, she goes, oh, I hope I don't get picked to do anything. And she did. She get picked to row with other. And one of her friends just sat there videoing the whole thing. It's like bragging rights for the day afterwards. And she actually enjoyed it. And I thought, well, that's the quirk. But I suppose, did you ever find, when you were doing kind of like, will you row with other, did anyone ever say no? Or has everyone said yes so far?
Someone very sneakily... their partner, they went, oh, they were talking to you.
It was good. It was good. It was clever.
Which I had to respect. That was very good. They were like, oh yeah, you know, he was definitely talking to you. And then their partner kind of begrudgingly got up. But that was the only one. No, nobody else said no. Everybody else seemed well up for it at that point. Yeah. I think it comes in a good point in the show where you know that we're not gonna ask you to do anything like, you know, really
not gonna embarrass you or anything like that. Yeah.
We try to always make sure that, like, we're the butt of the joke if there is one.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Mm. That all the show is, you know, and rather than like the people.
Well, I'm guessing if you wrote the overall script, Charlie, then you must have written the script that the two nominated members of the audience then got given.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
There's a story behind that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Please tell. Please tell.
Ollie, it's your story, man. You love it.
All right. So we were working in rehearsals, and at this point in the play was, I think, 47 or 48 pages long. Which is, for a show that is aiming to be about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, probably slightly too long, only a bit. So I said to Charlie, we're getting done with the first week of rehearsals. We were going to go away over the weekend. I said, just while you're away over the weekend, just maybe think about, you know, any cuts that you might want to make. If there's any bits you can trim out, let's do that. He was like, yeah, sure. Comes back on Monday. The script is 5 pages longer. I'm like, what's happened here, Charlie? He's like, I've written this scene that I want the audience to like do to each other. And I was like, okay. We read it through, and it was the scene that we ended up with, but it was four extra pages,
yeah.
And it was about pig farmers instead of rooster farmers, and the whole thing was just, I was just like, this is so long and so unnecessary.
I don't really know where my mind went and that. It was long.
It was really long.
But that's the beauty of rehearsal, is like the script, you know, I wrote it in an hour. That's not what you saw, it was what was written in an hour. The bass was written in an hour. Mm. And then and it was wonderful how like throughout we only had 2 weeks to rehearse. It was just me and all. And then
it wasn't even really 2 weeks.
No, because I had to go to London twice for a different project during the rehearsals, and I wasn't feeling very well as well, so I had a day off.
Basically Charlie was really lazy the whole rehearsal process.
Yeah, I was like, I've written it, like, you do the rest, mate. Like,
you've got 80% of the lines anyway, it's fine.
But the script changed so much in those 2 weeks. It was wonderful to see that and like how it developed. And I always, like I said earlier about who was going to play who, I did write it with Ollie and Odin. Like I knew before Ollie knew that Ollie was playing Odin. I just like, it was that voice. And then when Ollie actually was reading it out loud, I was like, right, okay. And the story changed and our dynamic came into it more. It's just a wonderful experience in general, really. The script and how it changes, it's beautiful to watch.
Well, as an audience member, we can tell there is a definite connection between you two, both in and out of character, and that just helps the whole magic of it feel even stronger. It was really, really, I just still applaud you both. I do, because it was just awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Thank you.
So I guess another question I had in mind was, have either of you been to the Jorvik Viking Festival before then, assuming this is where you chose to debut it?
So I went to watch my film. that sounds like such a big editing.
I was
such an actor answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was there
for the red carpet.
I went to watch my film. But I was born like in a village called like Lonsborough, which is just outside of York. And my grandma still lives there today. We moved to Hull, me, my mum and dad, when I was like 4 or 5. So I've always like had York and Hull as home cities. So I hadn't been to the festival, but I grew up going to the Jorvik every weekend, and I grew up sitting in the pubs with my grandparents, learning about the history, walking the walls. And like, that is what inspired me. Like, as a kid, I was like, I used to be like, who's in it before? I was like, I always used to think like, who's walked or like who's done that. So I haven't really been to the festival, but Jorvik and York and the idea of the Vikings has influenced my life from being a very young age. Probably why I have long blonde hair and half a beard. Because it's not as good as Ollie's, so he reminds me all the time that it's not as good as his. I haven't been to the festival, but like the Jorvik as a center and as an institution and the history of that has always had an influence on me.
How about you, Ollie?
So I believe I've been to the Viking Festival, but when I was a child. So I actually grew up in Wales, and my family's roots are all in Yorkshire, or at least my mum's side. I used to come to Yorkshire a lot. As a child, and went to the Jorvik Viking Center, and you know, came away with wooden swords and you know, like one thing. So I believe that I've been there as a kid, then obviously lived in Wales for most of my child and teenage life, and then I moved to Hull when I was like 20, and then haven't really been to York much since then. I don't know why. I got to Hull and stopped. But no, so I've been a lot when I was younger, but not recently. So to be honest with you, it was completely out of my sort of consciousness until Charlie brought the show to me, and I was like, one, this is a brilliant show, and two, like, Jorvik Viking Festival, that sounds fun. So yeah, so I'm a bit of a newbie to it, other than, you know, child me. But yeah, it was very exciting being able to go there, because, like, obviously we did a lot of research on the festival during the build-up, because we wanted to kind of, anytime we were, you know, talking about it, we wanted to accurately represent it and be a good
advocate
or you know, we're not an ambassador for they have their own people to do that, but, like, we didn't, you know, we wanted to be we wanted to be respectful of the history and everything that's come with it. So and they've been great. We had such a wonderful time working with them. They're such a lovely team. Like on and off site, do you know what I mean? They just couldn't do enough for you, and they were lovely to us when we arrived, and yeah, it's just been great.
Well, I think Ballyhall was a beautiful setting for your debut performance, and equally, I'm still glad that you found other venues for it, especially kind of like giving you the dynamic of other spaces you could sit Charlie when you decide to grace an every audience with your presence, kind of thing. Well, we know obviously you've had a very long childhood passion or an interest in the history of York, Charlie, but Ollie, have you ever had an interest in Viking Age history or even the mythology, or is this all just coming new to you now through the play?
So I would say so. Yeah, I always liked history in general. You know, when I chose subjects at school, history was one of them, because I just always found it interesting. I've always been a firm believer that we can learn a lot about where we are and where we're going from where we've been. And I think looking at history can inform a lot about, like, you know, what we can do as individuals going forward to kind of, like, curate our best sort of existence. And off the back of that, you know, there's a lot of like Viking associated media that I really love. You know, I watched Last Kingdom, and I watched some of Vikings. I've always enjoyed, like, the God of War games, which start in ancient Greece, but then they become like the more recent ones have been, like, Norse themed, and those are really, really exciting. You know, I know a lot about I've enjoyed Viking mythology and a bunch of different things. I wouldn't say that I particularly know a lot about specifically the history of it, but again, I know the history is, like, kind of shaky anyway, because you know, there was not a, as far as I'm aware, there's no, like, actual written, like, primary sources of Viking history, so it's kind of like it's hard to have any kind of, like, conclusive information. But I love the kind of mythology of it, and that was really important. That was a really important conversation that we had during the kind of the creation of the show, was, like, what we didn't want to do was sell it as something that's, like, super historically accurate. Because one, that's impossible. And two, like, it, you know, the whole point really is the mythology and the mythos and the storytelling and the excitement. And, like, if a story doesn't get embellished throughout its life cycle, and if it doesn't get, like, you know, made larger than life and grandiose and all that stuff, then it, you know, I think it sort of dies as a story. So I think, like, that was something that was really important to us. We wanted to make it really clear that this show was, like, not trying to be historically accurate. It was trying to be mythology. It was trying to be storytelling. It was trying to be, you know, larger than life.
I really respect that. And I think the storytelling is, I think, almost like the heart of the magic of it all, because that's all the Norse people had, were stories. They were not a literate writing people. Yes, they had people's carved runestones, but that was usually a memoriam to someone. Again, that, I guess, reflects the theme of legacy, really, that they carve a runestone in memoriam to anyone. But that for me is what also drew me into this whole crazy podcast and everything else in between, because I literally devour, like you, anything Nordic, whether it's games, TV or film. I have not been able to play the God of War games will ask, because I'm not a PS4 owner. I only have a humble Xbox One that is definitely aging because no more games coming out for it, alas. Mm. But anyway, but yes, it's the mythology which got me, because they seem so human, so flawed. They just happen to have life prolonging fruit, which echoes the message of eat five a day and you live longer, kind of thing. But I really like the storytelling aspect. This is why I really was in awe of the fact that A, you picked Odin of all the gods you could pick to have a conversation with. I mean, oh, it would have been a different play if it was Loki, totally. but Odin is famous for his storytelling aspects. Mm. And I think I was mentioning just before we hit the record button on this wonderful episode, I got to see the finale, which was about the Cursed Sword Tearfing, which is a very long historical saga of a famed Cursed Sword. Again, it's more fictional than historical. But Odin makes an appearance in that as a master of riddles and tries to trick a king out of killing a particular person because he'd done something wrong. The king then tries to strike Odin down and he gets cursed by Odin for daring to do so. But yes, Odin is a wanderer and a storyteller, and it's a really good character choice. Mm. I mean, I guess another question is, like, Charlie, well, and Ollie, if you had the option of making this a longer play, would you? Or do you think it's of its moment in its current form?
I think the show has room to develop, definitely. But what I love about the essence of this show is it's two people in a room telling a story with loads of other people who are there to be a part of it. So I think there is room to get longer, definitely. But this is like bigger picture questions. So we have Jorvik, but there it could be other shows on the horizon. So Jorvik has just been born, but who knows what else will happen. There is conversations about other shows, other things going on with a wider circle than just me and Ollie, bringing some other people into Old York who are very experienced, very knowledgeable. So yeah, there's stuff in the horizon, but as far as this show goes, what I love about this show, what makes the show special for me, is being able like to do it within the hour, and like some people can come and have a drink, come to the show, then go downstairs, have a few more drinks and have a great time. Mm-hmm. Alcoholic or non-alcoholic, I don't really drink, so
I don't really drink either. That's why, unfortunately, I was the only one there like cheering you on without an actual glass.
I would be a fictional glass there. we wanted to make it a show where people come to have fun. So I feel like that hour, like 50 minutes an hour, is a sweet spot where people enjoy the experience and go. But is there going to be other shows that are longer? We'll see what the fates have in store.
I think
there's
always a sweet spot with theatre shows, especially something where your audience is a little bit captive. I think, like, obviously people can get up and go at any time. I can't remember if it was the show you were at or the one before. Were you at the
first show? I was at the first one. I don't think anyone left that one.
Someone got up to go and,
I could be wrong.
Well, let's go get up to go and get an extra thing of mead, which we made a little joke about as they got up and went, and like, so that, you know, that's nice that we can kind of have that. But I think if it was too much longer, you know, if it's in like a pub venue, you might get people needing to get up and go to the toilet, or you know what I mean. And
true.
I think that's when you hit that kind of length, it starts to people's attention spans start to go a little bit as well. I think at the length it's at now, it's pretty good. I think we could maybe squeeze another 5 minutes in. But I think, like, at the moment we're sort of telling the story we want to tell, you know. I think, like, we both had objectives for what we wanted the audience to leave thinking. We sort of had individual ones, but sort of a joint one as well. Charlie, what yours was?
Mine was, I wanted someone to leave there with a smile on the face and to go, oh, I should text my mum and tell her I love her. That's what I wanted people to like. Text the fact, like a family member. Text a loved one.
Yeah.
And be like, just to let you know, I love you. Like, have a great night. Like, just like, that's what I wanted people to leave with that action in mind.
That absolutely rings true for the theme, and especially like with the lines that you quoted quite eloquently earlier on about kind of like, why do we have to wait so long to hear such praise? Yeah. Sorry, go on,
Ollie. No, yeah, and for me it was I wanted people to leave thinking like, oh, either I'm so glad I got involved with that, or oh, I wish I'd got involved a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? I wanted people to think like, you know, we only get one go round. Like, I want to grasp every opportunity. You know what I mean? Mm. That's what I really wanted people to leave with. And I think the way that the script is currently and the way the show is currently, I think we get there for both of those objectives. And I think adding too much more or doing too much messing with it, we run the risk of like losing the soul of that. I like it as it is. I think we could get a little bit more. I think we could squeeze a few more audience interactions in.
A few more monologues for you, mate, don't you worry, on your way.
I think actually we could lose some time from it.
Well, it certainly didn't match in a very good way any of the things I was expecting, because I honestly wasn't expecting, because the blurb for the event was quite brief and quite vague, just about immersive theatre and be part of the show. And I'm like, is it going to be anything like Cluedo? I've never played Cluedo, but I know you kind of get assigned a character and you say, so-and-so did this with a weapon in so-and-so room. I thought, is it like that? Do we just all get handed a script? So I thought, it was quite liberating to say, okay, we can just sit here and just watch and then see what happens. And that kind of anticipation really built up the atmosphere. And of course, having alcohol, I'm sure, would help a lot of people with their confidence and their find their voice. But because I remember in the show that I was in, the very first one, it was the point where both Uber and Odin were very much in each other's face. I think this is building up to the long stare. And there was a woman sat next to you and she said something I couldn't actually hear from where I was, but it just set the whole room laughing. So I just kind of like laughed along because I didn't know what we were laughing at. But I can't remember if you can remember what she said.
Yeah,
Ollie.
we were very close to her. so for the context for anyone listening or watching, there's a very the show goes on sort of peaks and troughs. You know, some of the time we're getting on very well, some of the time we're having a laugh, but sometimes the tensions between the characters ramp up. Odin wants something very specific from Uber. Uber wants something very specific from Odin, and they're not quite seeing eye to eye. And ironically, they get up in each other's faces and look eye to eye. We just had this like big monologue, big argument. We get like up, like right close in each other's faces, and this audience member who was wonderful, by the way, and was really lovely. Yeah, she gave some lovely words after the show as well. She said, "Now kiss."
That was it. That makes a lot of sense.
Close to each other. But it was great because like it meant that we could just, you know, break character as we'd already been doing throughout the show, and just both simultaneously
give it
that look. And then her partner said, "I think you meant to say that in your head, and you said it out loud." And she went, "Oh."
But that's what I love about the form of the show. Like that for us, that we were talking about this earlier, actually. That is like, that means we've done our job. As an audience member, you feel so comfortable.
Yeah,
you can now speak, because in a theatre, no one's going to do that.
Yeah,
no.
So we brought this, like, our aim has been achieved. We brought this down to earth so much. This story of Grand Vikings, and it's been brought to humanize so much. People feel like they can talk in it, and that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like we love that. Like a lot of other shows be like, oh no, but like for us, that's a massive like check that we've done our job right, which is wonderful.
And it gives every audience like something special.
Yeah,
you know, like if you go to see, and I'm not knocking these at all, but if you go to see like a West End show or like whatever, generally speaking, you're going to get exactly the same experience as the people who watched it before you and the people who are going to watch it after you. It's never going to be, you know, there might be slight variations, the cast might change slightly, blah blah blah, but like for the most part, you're going to get exactly the same show. But in this, like every audience is going to get something unique, because what they give in, they're going to get back, you know, like twofold. So that experience, I mean, for her specifically, is going to be entirely unique. because she's going to remember, oh my gosh, remember that time that I said that thing to those two Vikings. But also, like, everyone in that room is going to have, remember that time when that person said that thing to those two Vikings, and then they, like, acknowledged it, and then, you know. And every single show that we did had something like that in it, where there was an interaction, or there was something where, and it was, you know, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful to watch people engage with it so honestly and so openly and so generously as well. And it's like Charlie said, I think when somebody feels that comfortable to get involved like that, it's really it means a lot to us, because it means, like he says, we've done our job.
Because I can still remember when the script came out, and you picked the other lady that was on my long bench, and I think her name was Linda, but she said, like, you asked her, like, where do you hail from? And she thought for a minute, she goes, from the darkness.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was like, brilliant. I couldn't write that. Yeah, that was amazing. I felt bad having to be getting into it.
She was gung-ho, absolutely. I thought if my mum was here, she would have probably done the same thing. So I guess if there are plans afoot at Old York Theatre, do any of them still possibly remotely touch on more Vikingness? Or are you going to diversify into other topics, other settings, stories?
There is definitely.
I'm not trying to twist your leg or anything.
So what happens to chat about it? There's definitely more Viking tales to be told. Mm. There's definitely more, and there is a lot of other history to explore. We're not giving too much away. There's definitely more Viking shirts, and there's definitely other periods and moments of history, like in York and Yorkshire as a wider region, where I feel like there's more stories to be told, but more stories to be told from history that talk to us now. There's a lot. There's a lot.
We're also not. I don't think remotely done with this show yet.
Oh no, this show.
The feedback we've had has been sort of unprecedented for a first run of a show. It's like no show I've ever worked on, and I've been doing this for
a long time.
All right. And I've worked on some amazing shows before, but like none that have had such a forthcoming audience in terms of like beautiful, lovely feedback, so much excitement. We've had people going like, right, how can we make this show, you know, how can we get this show to Edinburgh? How can we do? And like, they're not even remotely involved with the show, but they just want it to see it do well.
Yeah.
And so this, you know, I really believe that, the messages of this show, the idea of legacy, the idea of, you know, celebrating our loved ones and our lives while we're still around to do so, I think is such a universally relevant topic. I think like it's something that people should see, you know, the length and breadth of the country. I think like, you know, there's still legs for this show to really go on and speak to people. And so I'm very much considering what we've done so far as opening the door. We've got a lot of room to fill yet. More Viking stuff for sure as well. I think like it's probably worth saying that there is some plan for us to do some video content as well. We're both trained in combat for screen. And we do have some Viking weaponry that we bought that we were considering using for the show, but realized it was going to be entirely impractical to swing a sword around in Ballyhall. We do have some. So there might be some video content that we put out, sort of screen combat stuff we've been having discussions about, which isn't giving too much away. I'm going to end up like Tom Holland on, you know, giving away MCU secrets. There's no Marvel breathing down our neck for this, don't worry. I'm joking. there's loads more we've got planned. We were in conversation with some really exciting people as well, we just want to continue telling great stories as best we can.
But Ollie's right, for Jorvik, this is the birth of Jorvik. And I feel like this show is something that me and Ollie will grow old with, and like It's a show that I think we could perform for the next 30, 40 years. Like, it, and then Jenna and our relationship to those characters will change as we experience life more and, like, get into, like, major life events and stuff. And I feel like, yeah, it's a show that will grow old with us, I feel. And it's like, this is just the beginning of it. And how I feel now at 25 playing Uber, when I'm, if I'm playing him when I'm 40, it's a very different relation, like, very different relationship to that character and to the story. And the words of me now, how I don't, in 15 years' time, I will interpret those words so differently. So yeah, it's just the mere beginning for sure.
That is pretty tame. I mean, I am all for a Jorvik world tour kind of thing. I think
so.
I think everyone should see it. I'm so impressed that it's taken until now and your wonderful self, Charlie, for anyone to think, why don't we just do a play in the setting where most people go to have a drink? It just makes so much sense of using the environment that you're in as a stage instead of having a block set with that kind of like the drop and the kind of like the invisible fourth wall. And interesting enough, the talk about the audience engagement, it made me think to the fact that I'm taking my four-year-old to the theatre to see Room on the Broom in 2 weeks. And of course, there's always engagement with children and theatre. And I'm thinking that magic is still perfectly good for us as adults. Why should we sit still and quiet and not boo and hiss and throw popcorn around and dance if we want to, that kind of thing. 100%. It's why I couldn't bring myself to take my daughter to see Frozen the musical, because I know she'd want to dance and sing along to all the songs, and that wouldn't be allowed in a Broadway musical. It just wouldn't happen. Thankfully, it's coming to Disney Plus at some point in the near future, so she can just dance and watch it from the living room. I'm looking forward to hearing everything that Old York Theatre can do in the future. And of course, Jorvik continue to spread its wings on ravens and fly around the world and bring Odin and Uber to new audiences. And where can our lovely listeners and viewers find out about your wonderful creative plans?
Go on, Ollie. You got clearer than me. Go on.
I am not the social media guy.
Yeah, I know who runs it, but you can plug it.
Oh gosh, right. At Old York Theatre?
Instagram.
Yeah, good. That's why has he put this on me? I'm the most social media allergic person on the planet. At Old York Theatre on Instagram. I think that's probably the best place. Yeah. That's where we sort of post everything through there. So if there's anything going on, it'll end up on there. We don't have a website or anything yet, I don't think.
We make video content. There'll be TikTok, YouTube, but Instagram is the best place to find
this, isn't it? I'll have to learn
the details again in the blurb that will accompany this video for anyone who wants to follow. I mean, I already follow them and tag them a lot. It's how I've been bothering Charlie ever since.
You're not bothering me at all. It's brilliant. Thank you.
Charlie loves it. In fact, just send him more stuff all the time, actually. Just keep him busy.
I need to get my screen time down, not only.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being part of this new bonus episode mini-series of The Legends of Jorvik. And you've definitely set a legend. And I would be delighted if you kept coming back to Jorvik Festival every year to put it on. Okay. And then I insist that you stay and enjoy the festival and see the finale. Definitely. It's always dramatic and wonderful. And whether it's a whole battle reenactment or like it was within Time Will Tell Theatre that did the finale for this year and last year. And I'm hoping, dear viewers and listeners, to have them on the next episode of Legends of Jorvik soon. They've course just busy with their many activities, but I have got a few other people that we might talk to. But yes, Amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Charlie and Ollie.
Thank you for
best of luck to Old York Theatre. May it continue to grow and success, and may Jorvik forever live, basically.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.